welcome to the Trust Your Body Project. Trust Your Body Project is a podcast and social media movement designed to help you heal, eat, and create space for the things that truly matter. I'm your host, Whitney Catalano. I'm an anti-diet, health at every size registered dietitian, helping you stop dieting, make peace with your body, and take the power back from your inner bully. Welcome to episode number 22. Today we are talking to Dr. Joshua Woolrich, who you may know from Instagram. He is a UK doctor, and he kind of recently became, in the past year and a half or so, became more of a anti-diet, health at every size doctor, and is really passionate about actually looking at the research, debunking a lot of these nutrition fallacies and fads that are out there. And he's doing a lot of really great work. But, you know, we had a very interesting way that we met online. So we talk a little bit about that. We're talking about the nuance of weight loss and recommending weight loss. So this is a very nuanced conversation. And then we also talk about, you know, how to talk to your doctor about not recommending weight loss. We talk about celery juice. And so it's a good one. I think you're going to like it. Just as a heads up, I did record this episode months ago. I have a backlog of interviews that I need to get up. And, you know, I think my interviewing skills and my ability to talk has improved since. So I'm just going to put this episode up because it's important. And then I'm hoping to have him back on at a later date to, you know, talk more specifically, deep dive into some of the common questions I get with nutrition fads and things like that. But at the end, I do ask him if he has anything to promote, and he didn't at the time. He does now. So he has a podcast with his friend, Alan Flanagan. I hope I'm saying that right. And it's called Cut Through Nutrition. It's a great podcast. I definitely recommend listening to it if you are interested in more conversations around nuance. I also think it's really interesting because his platform and Alan's platform are so big, they really are able to reach a lot of people that might not otherwise get this sort of health at every size information. So I'm just really glad that there are more people talking about it and creating space to talk about the nuance, because it's super important. So I would definitely go check out his podcast, check out his page. I'm pretty sure it's just Dr. Joshua Woolrich on Instagram. And yeah, so before we get into that, thank you to all of the people who have left reviews. Full disclosure, I had recorded an episode for this week like 5 times already and then threw all them out. So I have no idea what names I've read and what names I haven't. So you might get lucky and have your name read again. C. Pyle, N. Klein 8, Hoppy 708, Just a Darbs, love that, and Isabella Johnston. So I really appreciate all of your reviews. Please, please, please go leave reviews on Apple Podcasts. It's really important for me to eventually climb those charts and get this podcast out there. I know there are a lot of podcasts like mine, but if you find this one particularly helpful, I mean, any podcast that you listen to, is just always helpful to go leave a review on Apple Podcasts, because you know what? This really is a game of numbers out here. So we gotta compete. We gotta be out there. Really quickly, before we jump into this interview, I want to update you on what's going on. Like I talked about before, I am going to be updating my system around how I take discovery calls. Right now, it is still not updated, but it is going to be very, very soon. And if you want to book a clarity call with me, it's a 1-hour call where we just kind of deep dive into what's going on. And I'll tell you more information about coaching if I think it would be a good fit for you. And we just, you get to experience my coaching firsthand. That's really like the special part of these. So if you want to book that, you can go to whitneycatalano.com/book. And again, I'm going to be changing that process very soon. So you're going to have to apply eventually to book a call with me because I only have so much time. You know what I mean? So that is coming up very soon. I also am going to be launching my new program. So there's two things that are going on in the future, just to get you excited about. The first is Club TYB. I will be reopening it indefinitely, like it's just going to stay open in a few weeks. So that is coming up and then you can join. I definitely don't recommend joining Club TYB when it opens up again. If you are brand new to this journey, if this is, you know, you're just learning about this information for the first time, you haven't, you know, stopped binge eating, or you're like brand new to this journey, I just don't recommend it. I think you'll get really overwhelmed. I'm actually seeing that with some of the people in Club TYB, and I've been talking to some people about it who are currently in it, who just are feeling very overwhelmed by the group right now, because it's a lot of information at once if you are new. And I know that those of us who are very sort of control oriented and use dieting as a method for control and letting go of that is very, very scary. And so one of the things that I find with my clients, especially at the beginning of this process, is it is almost second nature, and it's kind of a habitual response to respond to chaos and this sort of chaos that comes with the beginning of this healing journey with more information, more control, like trying to figure out if you're doing it all right. And the problem with that is that this is not like a meal plan. This is not a short-term meal plan. This is not anything. This is a journey. And there is different information and different things to expect at different stages. That is why I work on a six-month basis with clients, because literally 6 months is the time period that this needs to happen in. This does not happen in two sessions. This doesn't happen in four sessions. This is a long, long journey. And in that 6 months, you're not even going to be done. I get you to the place where you have all the tools you need. You feel really comfortable in your journey and that you can handle anything that comes your way, because I've completely, you know, taught you how to change the way that you think about these things and the way that you process and deal with these things and understanding your old patterns versus new patterns that are going to serve you better. So that is why joining Club TYB, my membership site for supporting people, supporting you on your journey, if you're new to all of this, is not going to serve you. It may feel like, ooh, a place where I can get as much information as physically possible. I promise that you will be overwhelmed. You will feel like you're not doing it well enough, that you're, you know, having to do 100 things at once. It's just going to be too much. So with that being said, because that is, you know, definitely something that's been coming up for a few people, and I know I have a lot of new people that have been following me recently, I am going to launch another version of my group program. It is a program that takes you from emotional and binge eating to food freedom. It is a 16-week program, so it's not going to be as in-depth, as comprehensive as one-on-one coaching, just because group programs typically aren't, right? Like it's meant to give you a lot of structure, teach you all the foundations, and take you through my specialized way of doing things. So I have a really specific process that I take people through. And a lot, if you like the way that I explain things, if you like my approach, this sort of mindset driven, emotional healing driven approach, then this program might be for you, and you will get free access to Club TYB with this program. I'm not totally sure what it's called yet, because I've changed the name like six times since I started running it, you know, a year and a half ago, and it's evolved and it's grown and it's kind of my baby, if you will. Like it's just, I don't know, I love it, but I need a better name. I've never been good at naming things. That's always something that's been like, I can write essays for days, but if it comes to like short naming of things, it's just not my specialty, let me tell you. So we're going to be working on that, but I will be sending out more information about that soon and just announcing that everywhere very soon. But yeah, those are the things that are coming up. So if that excites you, let me know. So now that we've got all that out of the way, just a reminder that this podcast is for informational and educational purposes only. It is not a substitute for individual medical or mental health advice. Also, the last thing I want to say about this interview is I do think there are other ways to go about talking to your doctor. I totally respect some of the things that he recommends in the interview. And I would like to do another episode kind of more in depth on that particular topic by itself. So if there are any doctors who listen to this, who are Health at Every Size doctors and who feel like they have a really good method for patients to talk to their doctor about not recommending weight loss, then please let me know if you want to come on and talk about this stuff. Let's do it. Let's chat. So yeah. All right, let's get into it, shall we? Okay, so today we have Dr. Joshua Woolrich. We were just talking before I started this recording about what kind of doctor you are. But first, I want to kind of go back and talk about how my first introduction to you was someone sending me your post that I did not agree with. And I just lashed out on in your
you
comments.
Let loose.
Yeah. So your Instagram handle used to be Unfattening.
Yeah, that it did. I started my Instagram journey as a weight loss account, which, don't hold it against me, I feel like 95% of Instagram accounts are weight loss accounts, are they not? Or at least people trying to lose weight and using Instagram as incentive slash kind of inspiration, if you can call it that in quotes. So I was one of those. I started as a weight loss account. And actually, it was a really catchy name. I'm still upset about having to change it, to be honest.
Okay, because that name personally had me feeling so like, like I wanted to pick fights with you just because of your Instagram handle.
and actually, that's why I, that's why I changed it, because I realized that it was problematic, because the first thing that you assumed when you read that name was that fat was bad and I was going to help you unfat. So hence, as much as I thought it was catchy, and from a brand perspective, it was wonderful, it wasn't the brand that I was anymore. And as such, it needed to go. But it was like cutting off a limb. It was quite hard. I don't know why it was so hard. We definitely had some fun on one of those, on one of my old posts.
Yeah. Well, I imagine it would be, and we can get into that in a second, but I imagine it would be a little bit like sort of losing part of your identity that you had for so long. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, I would say so, because it was something that for me made sense where I'd come from. I think I still justified the name based on the fact that I was attracting the kind of people that I then wanted to help. Mm. And so I was like, well, now I'm talking about the problematic nature of weight loss. I'm like, you know what? My account is called Unfattening. Who are the people coming to my account? They're the people that want to lose weight. So actually, this is like some weird catch-22 thing where I change my name, I might help less people, but I don't change my name and I might also make people feel bad about themselves. I'm like, I don't know what to do. So it took me a while. It took me a long while to change it. One of my, you could call it a strength or a weakness, is that I'm incredibly self-critical. And so it took me a while to work out which critique was the correct critique about my Instagram handle.
Right. Because then you get into the conversation of like, who is deciding what's correct and where do your moral ethics lie?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I came into the end going, if I'm having to explain myself, then it's not worth it. It had to change eventually. It's now just my name. And I've moved on from that. I'm no longer upset.
It's interesting because I was very confused about what your account was at first. I just thought you were like another doctor who didn't know what you were talking about. And you were like, just, you know, basically weight shaming people. And so I came in real hot. And part of the reason why I wanted to have you on is because this is a really nice story of becoming friends through initially fighting in Instagram comments. White flag. I'm sorry.
Well, okay. So full disclosure, there was a long period of time that I didn't know what my account stood for either. So to be honest, like, that's okay. Like, I went through a weird journey of realizing the problematic nature of indiscriminately advising weight loss and then trying to reconcile that with me having lost weight and going, how do I hold the two things in tension? I was like, I don't know how to do this. Right. I was like, I understand from a medical perspective that weight can affect health, however it doesn't always. Mm-hmm. And at the same time, I'm like, how do I do this? I was like, I don't get it. I was like, what am I? Like, and actually that post that you commented on, I've since put quite a long-ish edit on the top of that post because I was trying to explain something around unconditional permission to eat all foods that I wasn't quite explaining correctly, if you see what I mean. Mm. And at the time, because this was kind of towards, not necessarily towards the beginning, but it's still fresh for me. And to be honest, it still is fresh for me now.
Right.
It was along the lines of seeing some people use the tenet of intuitive eating, the unconditional permission to eat all foods, as almost an excuse to justify only eating nutrient-sparse foods. And I didn't quite understand how to explain it in my head. And so I was trying to explain that just because you have unconditional permission to eat, it doesn't mean that you should eat. And it came across wrong. And right. I think I've kind of expressed that better since then in regards to the better your relationship with food becomes, the less problematic moderation becomes. Because again, in the right. end, we are honoring our body. We are ideally picking nutrient-dense foods. But if we don't start from a position of unconditional permission, that moderation then ends up portraying itself as restriction because it comes from fear rather than from freedom. Ironically, uh-huh. a lot of the people that followed me really liked that post. Mm-hmm. And that was the difficult thing. It was trying, because I feel like they were part of the journey with me. And so I think that they were at that kind of point as well with me where we were kind of getting through some of these tenets or understanding that some of this intuitive eating stuff was really helpful and was really what we should be striving for. But also going, hang on, if I just give myself unconditional permission to eat all foods, I'm just going to eat lots of rubbish. And it was trying to hold those two things in tension again and explain it better, which I'm right. hoping I do now.
Yeah. So I like that you kind of talked about how moderation can sometimes be this, it can be restrictive in itself, this sort of goal being moderation as opposed mm-hmm. to having unconditional permission and then settling into like a natural moderation because that's what the body yeah. prefers.
Yeah. It's okay to pick nutrient-dense foods, but not if it's from a place of fear.
Right. And I see all of this on like a spectrum, right? Of if you've got the fierce fat activism over here, and then you've got like the most diety weight loss, you know, rhetoric over here, I almost see your journey kind of like walking along this spectrum line mm. towards this side of it and trying to navigate how you're talking about it as you go, except you mm. have a ton of people following you who are still looking for that diet component. Would you agree with mm. that?
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, I would. I get people message me that have followed me for a while and have followed me from a time where I was giving relatively sensible suggestions about not giving into fad diets and things. Because I've never been one to talk. I've always been one to talk about how fad diets were ridiculous. Mm-hmm. But I still wasn't quite at a place of recognizing some of the problematic nature of it or kind of any dieting. Mm-hmm. And so I still get people messaging me kind of going, I know that the weight that I'm currently at is causing me health problems, but I don't know what to do because what you're saying makes sense. And it's like, it's really hard. this is why I feel like sometimes I'm still slightly on the outskirts of the non-diet culture, slightly, because I don't think that losing weight is mutually exclusive to understanding the problematic nature of diet culture. I feel like there are times where weight loss can be beneficial for health. But the question is, how do we go about that in the least problematic way possible? And I don't know if there's an answer to that apart from focusing on your relationship with food first. But then we get into so many questions about, is that weight loss actually going to improve your health and all that kind of stuff, which right. is a much longer conversation. But again, I think it's sometimes a bit nearsighted to pretend that it will never do. Mm. The tension is ridiculous.
Yeah. Well, and it's tough too, because it's one of those things where I think, you know, a lot of the community has to take this sort of more extreme approach where it's like, we have to speak out against the pursuit of weight loss in general, because right now the evidence does not really support the benefits of trying to like diet or calorie restrict for weight loss, because we just don't even know if it's going to work. We don't even know if it's going to, you know, lead to better health. Like you said, like we don't know, and we don't have the evidence that people are saying that we have about it. And so it is an awkward conversation to have, because it's kind of this conversation that needs to be happening in medical communities. And then we're also mm-hmm. trying to like talk on social media and like explain these really nuanced topics to people and these yeah. like have these nuanced conversations, and it's confusing enough when you've already got like so many things in society telling you have to look a certain way or you have to have certain health, or like if you have diabetes it's your fault, or like all these things that are just so ridiculous and like blown out of proportion and really rooted in historical body oppression basically. And yeah, it just gets like really nuanced. So I completely understand what you're saying. What do you say in those moments to people?
Yeah, what do I say? see, I don't know. And that's the problem, is that what I tend to say is it's not my job to tell you that you should or shouldn't be losing weight, mm-hmm. Which I think a lot of us in the medical community get wrong. I think that it's relatively easy from just a statistical perspective to look at the extremes, mm-hmm. be that either way. So look at the extremes of higher weight and saying that weight loss will improve health generically, or looking at low weight and saying that weight gain will improve health generically. It's very easy to look at those two extremes and then just forget that the middle ground is incredibly complicated.
Right.
Because just like I'm not here to tell you that you should lose weight, I'm not going to say either way. Like, in the end, you're going to make a decision about this. All I'm here to do is to remind you that there are lots of different methods and they're all problematic. And some of them are less problematic than others, but you can't make them non-problematic.
Right.
So what I tend to say is, focus on your relationship with food first. And that may make any method you choose less problematic, but even so, you're still going to have to focus the entire time on making sure that it doesn't wreck your relationship with food, because it has that potential either way. Mm-hmm. And the difficulty is that the way that I lost weight, I don't think is, like, I wouldn't tell necessarily other people to do that. That's the problem, you see. It's just because for me, mm-hmm. it doesn't mean that it's going to work for someone else. And actually, if I were to go back, I still think that I feel better physically now than when I was larger. I don't know what word to use. This is the problem.
Yeah, bigger, larger, that's what I usually
large say. Is fine. Whether or not it was directly at that moment in time having an impact on my health, I know that physically I feel better now. I also feel mentally better now, but that's a different conversation about whether or not how much of that is actually weight and how much of that is weight stigma. Mm-hmm. But physically, I know I feel better now. So I don't think that weight loss in itself, in a robotic sense, was a bad idea. But I think that the way I did it, by completely ignoring the impact my relationship with food had, because I didn't even know what that term was. I had absolutely right. no idea. It was how I was trying to describe what I felt already, but without realizing what the words were.
Hmm.
So as I said, I'd always been one who would be addressing kind of fad diets and how ridiculous this stuff was and how illogical this stuff was, and going, it's just illogical to claim that, for example, keto, where you just don't eat any carbs, is better for you than eating carbs. I was like, that makes no sense. I was like, from a medical perspective, it's energy balance in the end. And so all this fad stuff is just pointless. And I didn't know quite how to explain some of that. And actually, when I came across some of the intuitive eating stuff, I was like, hang on, this actually explains the discomfort I've been feeling about some of this stuff that I didn't really know how to put into words. But again, it's so hard because I don't think for some people they're ever going to be able to successfully lose weight without having a negative impact on their overall health. I don't know how to distinguish that. And that's the problem with the problematic nature of indiscriminately advising weight loss. I don't know.
I think one of the things, there's kind of two ways that I've taken to explaining it. The first is, I really just kind of stumbled on this in the past few days and I really like it, which is this idea of informed consent. So when we're talking about doctors recommending weight loss or whatever, people in the medical community, public health campaigns recommending weight loss, there's no informed consent happening. People don't know the risks. People don't know the statistics around, you know, the success rate of dieting, or the fact that, like, in a lot of weight loss studies, people who continue to maintain their dieting behaviors still put the weight back on, you know, the risks to your metabolism, the risks to your, like, the risks to your relationship with food, like you were just talking about, and anxiety and depression. Like, there isn't accurate informed consent happening. And that's a really big ethical problem for me, because I get that there are going to be, you know, people who are still looking for weight loss or whatever it is. And from a body autonomy perspective, I'm not going to say, no, you're never allowed to, like, want to lose weight again or, like, whatever. That's not my job. And I love the way that you said that. It's like, that's not my job. But informed consent and, like, advocating for that, of, like, understand what you're getting into. Because if you were to take a medication or have a surgery, you would get a list of risks.
I agree. What I think is difficult coming from a medical background is, and especially from a surgical background where I'm currently in, mm-hmm. is that we deal with informed consent all the time, right? We deal with consent for operations. And part of that consent taking is explaining the alternative options. It's explaining the benefits of going ahead with the operation and then the risks of going ahead with the operation. And life is full of risks. There's flipping, there's risks by from leaving the house and crossing the road, but there are more risks to never leaving the house.
Right.
So it's always a balance of risk reward, right? And so I think we're still in a place from a research perspective of really truly being able to understand the risk reward side of all of this. Mm-hmm. And some of it is, I think, because of the way that we've done some of the research.
Mm-hmm.
I think because we've ignored people's relationship with food when it comes to this research. You never see that kind of thing on any of these weight loss studies or weight loss method studies. That's what I mean about the extremes being easier to justify than the middle ground. So for example, let's put this into a medical perspective that makes sense to me and hopefully will be an easier conversation to have because there's no weight stigma surrounding it. So you've got a big blood vessel within your abdomen that sits at the back called your abdominal aorta. And over time, as we get older, there's a large percentage of the population where that aorta gets slightly wider. As it gets wider and wider and wider, it's called an abdominal aortic aneurysm or a triple A. The wider it gets, the higher the risk of it rupturing. And we know that rupture is pretty much almost certain death.
Mm-hmm.
So there's got to be a point at which we go, okay, when do we do something about this? However, the risks of doing an operation for something like this is incredibly high. There's been a lot of research working out when does the risk of death from the operation get outweighed by the risk of death from leaving it alone. And so we now have, in the UK anyway, specifically, we now have screening programs where at the age of, I think it's at the age of 65, we ultrasound someone's abdomen, we have a look. If it's a certain diameter, we ultrasound them every 6 months or every year. And we kind of monitor until it gets to a point where we go, okay, the risks of the intervention are now outweighed by the risks of leaving it alone.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's the difficulty with weight loss is that there's such a gray area where I personally think that the risks of intervention are much higher than the benefits of actually successfully losing weight.
Mm-hmm.
Now, if we were robots, we'd all just lose weight and get to a certain level and that'd be fine, but we're not robots. We need to be pretty sure that undertaking that is going to be worth it. And that's what I mean by the relationship with food making that different, because the better your relationship with food, the lower the risk of intervention becomes. It doesn't become zero, but it becomes less risky. There's my medical way of explaining it.
Yeah, I like that. And I think, you know, not to overcomplicate things too much, we'll move on from this topic in a minute, you know, then we also kind of have to factor weight stigma, like you were mentioning, into this whole thing.
You've
got the risks and you've got, you know, even if we get to a point where it's like, let's say your relationship with food is really good and you just like want to lose weight for whatever reason you want to lose weight. But then the whole concept of this being like an intervention and that, you know, being bigger is a problem, despite the obvious facts of like, what's happening in society and weight stigma and like that being problematic for your health of like being on the receiving end of oppression, then we've also just got like having unbiased medical providers and just all of like, okay. I felt that conversation going like really deep into like a rabbit hole of hypotheticals.
And
okay, I'm going to reel this back in.
Welcome to my world. That's the problem of being, unfortunately, that's the problem of being a doctor. Is that I do get people kind of going, well, what do I do when my doctor says this? And I'm like, please have some compassion for him. I know that, or her. I'm like, I know that we're here to help you, but also we don't understand this stuff.
Right.
And coming from a place where we're wanting to help, and even if we're getting it wrong, believe me, our intentions are good. Like we don't become doctors to piss people around. I think we're getting other health providers' backs up by coming at them full force with some of this stuff instead of just going, okay, I understand in my head the problematic nature of weight loss. I get why they're telling me to lose weight because there are assumptions there, rightly or wrongly, there are assumptions. And trying to put those, and I know it's easier said than done, but trying to separate those two and not go, the doctor is evil, is hard. But I'm hoping that there is a bit of a shift happening. And I don't know, maybe it's the bubble that I'm finding myself in.
I was going to ask you, because we were talking about staying in your lane, I was going to be like, what even is your lane? But then I figure we should just jump straight to celery juice, because that seems like a really good segue.
Go for it. We can come back to lane if you want. It's fine.
Yeah, we can come back
should
to lane.
Should I be talking about celery juice? Because I'm not sure that's really my lane. That's the problem.
Oh my God, I love it. I'm here for it. Because the number of people who freaking ask me about celery juice, and I'm just like, I can't. And I think the way that you describe it is amazing, which is stop pretending like it's a cure-all. Yeah, it may have some benefits, or there may be some placebo happening, or there may be, you know, celery juice is like, I don't know, whatever, it's water. Like, you kind of are like, okay, like, there's some things, but then, you know, people are really taking it out of context. It's like medical miracle. So explain that for us, because this is important.
Well, for people, to be honest, though, I don't want to explain it for people who haven't come across it, because it's so helpful that they haven't seen it. But I will, because if they do come across it, it's good that they know. There is someone on the internet who lives in LA, because all this happens in LA, obviously, called the medical medium. Sorry, I used to live in LA. I was a kid, though, before any of this LA nonsense happened.
You weren't part of the problem.
No, definitely not. So he calls himself the medical medium. Now, one of those two words is correct, seeing as he claims to talk to spirits, or he may do, like, who knows? But he claims to talk to his source at the originator. Those are the exact words. But this source that he has tells him nutrition information that is ahead of its time, which is really exciting. And that's sarcasm, by the way, just in case, it's British sarcasm. And it tells him stuff that nobody else knows and that is ahead of its research. So no research can prove this stuff, which is really convenient. And the latest thing was that celery juice has to be juiced, has to be drunk by itself, has to be drunk first thing in the morning, has to be about 12 ounces. If you drink that on a daily basis, pretty much you'll cure everything, like literally everything. The main things are skin conditions, which we can go into why that's an easy one to pick at. Inflammatory bowel disease. I'm pretty sure he's said that it will cure cancer at some point. But basically, it all comes down to the fact that he's been told, apparently, that the Epstein-Barr virus, which is a virus that gives you mono, so it's the virus that gives you the kissing disease, it apparently causes everything. So EBV causes eczema, EBV causes psoriasis, EBV causes liver cancer, EBV causes inflammatory bowel disease, and he says that celery juice cures EBV. Mm-hmm. Now, there's two big things wrong here. One, EBV doesn't cause any of those things. And secondly, we have no evidence that celery juice does anything to EBV. So much logical fallacy, it's unreal. But the problem that we have is that there are two things that we love and hate in the medical world. One of those is confirmation bias, and one of those is placebo. So confirmation bias, in layman's terms, is essentially where if you're told that something is going to happen, so if you're told, drink this and your skin condition will get better, it tends to come about, and that's not through any sort of magical reason, but it tends to be along the fact that you are looking for things specifically related to what you're told is going to get better. And alongside that, working in tandem at the same time, is the placebo effect, where the simple act of doing something irrelevant as to what it is will make certain things better. And it's amazing. We know this. The biggest thing that we have is with pain relief, for example. So there's a massive element of the placebo effect when it comes to pain relief in the medical world. We know that tablets don't work as well as injections when it comes to pain. And we also know, so strangely, that even when we tell patients that it's a placebo and it doesn't actually do anything, their pain will still get better. So it's one of those amazing things where our mind has so much power over our symptoms. Positive attitude, as much as it sounds airy-fairy, is incredibly beneficial to our overall health. So celery juice has become one of those things where people have started drinking celery juice in the morning, and because they've been told something and it seems to be happening, they believe that it must be true. Mm-hmm. And the difficulty that I have is, firstly, okay, it's a relatively upper middle class thing to be able to do, because you have to own a juicer and you have to buy crap loads of celery every morning. And then you have to have
so
time
much
to juice
celery
and then drink it. And it's all going up in price as well, because everyone's buying celery. but you have to do all that. And that's fine. And you're drinking more liquid in the morning because it's pretty much like 98% water. And that's fine. You're eating more veg, so there are some micronutrients there, but it's celery, so not much. So that's all good. That's all fine. Like, eat celery, drink celery, do whatever you want with celery, although maybe have the fiber, because the fiber's the good bit, but whatever. Have your celery. When you start believing the pseudoscience that comes with celery juice, that's when I have a problem. Because it's a really fast, slippery slope down, and something that I got sent today about this health person, I don't know who he was, prescribing lavender oil for a type 1 diabetic and dying. And it's not like, this isn't a joke. Like, pseudoscience is much easier to believe if you already believe the easy stuff. Mm-hmm. And so celery juice is really easy to address. Like, celery juice is much easier to address than essential oils, because it's relatively straightforward, and so you can talk about it. So I'm addressing celery juice relatively frequently because I want to make sure that people aren't just believing everything that they're told. And if there's one person that then doesn't go down the rabbit hole of alkaline diets to cure their cancer or essential oils to cure their diabetes, and there's one person that doesn't die because they've taken advice like that, because that's where we're at, it's a matter of life or death at that point, then my job's been a good one. Mm-hmm. So that's why I don't like the celery juice craze.
Yeah.
Because it's everything that's wrong with pseudoscience. Mm-hmm. But once you've bought into one thing, it's really easy to buy into the next. And we could segue back into, once you've dieted once, it's really easy to diet.
Yes.
You know, so it's just address the easy stuff. We've got to pick our battles. Mm-hmm. And so at the moment, I'm picking my battle of celery juice. And it's led to some interesting conversations with some relatively large celebrities on Instagram. But I hope that it ends as 2019 ends. Something tells me that the medical medium will come up with something new and everyone will believe him because they believed him about celery juice. And that's the whole problem.
Right. Well, and you know, the medical medium has been around for a while now. He's just like really gaining popularity now. And one of the biggest things that I heard when I first started working in a functional medicine office was how, I think it's levothyroxine, but maybe it's another one of the thyroid supplements, is made from pork, and how the body like inherently rejects pork or something like pork-based supplements because the spirit of the animal is like in the thing. And it's like, what's interesting there is I've had friends switch to a different thyroid medication that wasn't made from pork, and they did.
And they felt better.
They did have better success with it for whatever reason. I don't think that has anything to do with the spirit of the animal being in your thyroid supplement.
No. And you know, that's what I mean. That's the thing of coming at this from a medical perspective, going, actually, they probably did have better success with it. Then you could argue maybe that is the point. And then, but then I go back to my, once you believe some pseudoscience, you're more likely to believe the rest.
Right.
What I would say to that, though, is that we've got a lot of people who have porcine heart valves that have saved their lives, in that must have a lot of you know, pig spirits going around.
Right.
So I'm not sure what they're going to do because they can't switch.
Yeah,
so
they're screwed.
They must be screwed.
I also think, you know, there's this whole conversation too of like privilege that comes into this, because one of the supplements is like significantly more expensive than the other. And you're just kind of like, okay, well, the LA goop culture and the LA like online pseudoscience culture is really a conversation of privilege that needs to be happening. But no one wants to talk about socioeconomics in this. No one wants to talk about the fact that like we are selling, you know, thin white health to other thin white people and then blaming all of chronic disease on like the way that you eat and like don't eat beans, you know, or whatever bullshit. And it's just like, oh my God.
Don't eat kale, but here's a recipe I made with kale in it.
Yeah, it's so complicated.
Let's not talk about Gwyneth Paltrow, because then we'd have to talk about how she has struck a deal with Netflix for a new series of documentaries. It's like, is it my job to watch them so I know how to respond to them? But actually, you know what? Why would I put my brain through that nonsense? Like, it's just...
Yeah.
Oh, I know, right? You know, benefit and risk.
Yeah, exactly.
the social economic side of things is so important, and it is ignored far, far too much. Every time that we say, all you have to do is do this, we're shaming people who can't do that, who can't buy more veg, who can't eat more grains, who can't get more fiber in their diet, who can't avoid highly processed foods because they don't have the money to be able to buy food or the time that it takes to then make a meal at home. You know, we're just ignoring the large part of the population that actually needs the most help around their health. Like, I don't need it. Like, you don't need it. Mm-mm. Like, we're not worried about where our next meal is going to come from, right?
Right.
And there's veg in the fridge. Do you know what I mean?
Right.
I have to own my privilege, but understand where it comes from, okay, and then try and do as much as I can to get around it.
So what is your lane?
What is? Oh, yeah, good point. I don't know anymore. No. So my official lane, I guess, if we're defining lane as something that I am studied in, mm-hmm, would be medicine, with then, wow, going on to kind of being a surgical trainee. So I'm a trainee surgeon within the NHS in the UK. And at the moment, I work within trauma and orthopedics, and that's most likely going to be my kind of long-term pathway. So if we go down the route of people should only talk about their lane, then that would mean that I should only talk about hip replacements. But ironically, mm-hmm, I don't know. At the moment, I probably know more about this diet culture stuff than I do know about hip replacements. So I'm getting there in my actual lane.
This is a side project until you're just full-time hip replacements.
No, I want to do hands. That's far more interesting than hips to me.
Hands?
Yeah, hand trauma. Hand trauma that's the end lane goal.
I'm going to be honest, that's a little bit random, but I'm here for it.
It's random until you cut your finger off with a chainsaw and then need someone to help you.
That's so true. Oh, and one question I wanted to ask you too, on this whole like not attacking doctors, and I meant to ask you this earlier. One of the things that I recommend that people do is not like go in guns a-blazing with their doctors and be like, but to go in with some research, like a few articles that I have that are like staple articles that are, you know, here's health at every size, here's this, and to just be like, hi, like I brought some research. If they have no other options, and if they only really have one doctor they can go to, and their doctor consistently recommends weight loss, like a general practitioner or whatever, to just like bring some of this research in, do you think that would be a good approach?
I think it depends how, mm-hmm, and when. So, mm-hmm, I'm thinking of this from a personal perspective. So I'm thinking of this. Let's say I was a general practitioner, and I had, in the UK at least, we have a very limited amount of time with patients. Mm-hmm. And you've got a certain thing that you're trying to get done, and you're trying to serve them as best as possible, and you're trying to get through everything as much as possible. And as doctors, one of our bugbears is when people bring stuff in printed out from online. And that's usually because 99% of the time when someone does that, it's because they've Googled their symptoms and they found something that matches their symptoms, and they come in saying, I have EBV, for example. Uh-huh. And they go, look, it proves it, because this, I have all this, so I need treatment for EBV. Mm-hmm. And it sets the consultation back a whole half an hour, and you don't have half an hour.
Right.
So it's a frustrating part of the job where everybody online is a doctor. And so everyone will tell you what your problem is. And actually, being a doctor is relatively difficult. And so there are so many
things.
I know. I mean, I'm really lazy, as I said. So I think more people could be doctors than they think they could be doctors. But it requires a lot of kind of understanding and seeing different things within a history and seeing different things within an examination and bringing a whole load of different things together, mm-hmm, to come to the most likely diagnosis around something. And then also at the same time, holding in tension those other diagnoses that might be there, and understanding that when you just focus on one, you kind of ignore the other. And so it's a case of trying to keep those in whilst also spending time focusing on that one, because if it is that one, that's going to be the quickest way to deal with the problem. That's being a doctor in about 30 seconds. Hopefully that made some sense. So if you come in with research, which is valid, don't get me wrong, but if you come in at the beginning of the consultation and say, before we start, I would just like to give you this piece of research about health at every size so that you don't prescribe me a method of weight loss that you wouldn't prescribe to a person in a thinner body. As a doctor, instantly, my guard would be like, they're not going to listen to anything I say from now on. And whether that's right or wrong, that's what I mean about having some compassion for the doctors as well. Because again, in the end, we're human and we're people, and we have our own problems and we have our own assumptions. And ironically, we have our own size as well. Mm-hmm. my personal opinion, and again, I'm one doctor, so I'm not necessarily 100% right about this, but from knowing doctors, the way that I feel like they would take it the best would be to have a conversation with them around your health. If during the consultation they bring something up in regards to weight loss that you have a feeling isn't relevant, mm-hmm, Mm-hmm. Let it go. Like, and I know that's a really hard thing to do. I know it is. But let it go till the end of the consultation. Because interjecting and stopping at that point and going, hang on a second, would you prescribe that to someone in a thinner body? It's not going to be conducive for a good conversation. Mm-hmm. Whether it's right or wrong that the doctor is doing that, we all have to have compassion for the other person that's there. Mm-hmm. And yes, I know it's the doctor's job to have more compassion, but at the same time, we're in a weird situation here. Mm-hmm. We're in a weird situation where when you're going with a health problem, it's unusual that you know more. And in this situation, at the moment, around health and weight, you may know more. Mm-hmm. And that's a really freaky thing, because they don't want to admit that. And so if you come at them basically telling them that they're wrong, that there's an element of trust that has to be built. I think what would be better would be to log that. And then at the end of the conversation, go, thank you for seeing me. Like, I know that's weird, right? It's like, I don't want to thank you because you've just told me that I should lose weight and it's got nothing to do with what I came for. But if you say thank you, they're more likely to then listen to what you're about to say. I don't think that it was appropriate for you to mention my weight in that situation, but going back to it. So that's what I mean about leaving it to the end. You know, can I leave you with this stuff? Even just saying stuff like, I know it might come across as patronizing and I promise I'm not trying to be, but please can I leave you with this stuff? Because there's some really interesting stuff going on at the moment with the conversation around health and weight. And I'd love you to read some of this stuff because I'd love to have your opinion on it. Again, you know more about this stuff at the moment, which is a weird position to be in mm-hmm. from a patient-doctor relationship. So use it wisely.
Right.
And know that there are certain techniques that you can do to make this conversation go better.
That's really good to know. One of the things that I also recommend people do is they really emphasize like a history of disordered eating if they have one during the intake, because I've found that that can be a little more helpful. It's like, even if doctors aren't equipped to know much about disordered eating, to just be like, yeah, I have a history of whatever. A lot of people aren't comfortable with that, but it is one thing that you can do to be like, you know, without just being like, you better not recommend weight loss, to just at least be like, hey, you know, I'm working with a dietitian, even if you're not currently, right? Just to be like, I'm working on my relationship with food. I'm working on my history of disordered eating. Just want to like let you know in the intake process and the assessment process, because that also may help.
That's right. Yeah. Because it gives context, or it should give context, or at least it should add to the context, right? So mm-hmm. even if they then don't read the papers that you give them, it might then stick in their mind of like, here's, and the next time they see someone with signs of disordered eating, it might ring a bell, you know, because being a doctor is pattern recognition. So if we make the patterns clearer mm-hmm. and by not hiding some of this stuff, and again, I know it's not as simple as that. I know that. And it's very difficult to talk about this stuff. And I know that from a personal perspective. If as doctors, we see these patterns emerging because we come across people who disclose this stuff, it's going to be much easier to then see those patterns in the future. Mm-hmm. When we come, you know, I it's really hard to treat a patient that won't tell you what's going on.
Right. Totally.
You know, we can't guess stuff.
Yeah. Like, that's so interesting because, and this is kind of the last thing I'll say on it, is just I experienced a lot of that with my dad a couple of years ago, which is he would never tell the doctor anything. And I would get so mad at him. Like, you can't withhold information. Like, I would literally go in and be like, you got it. Like, these are all the things you need to know. Like, this is part of it, is we have to be forthcoming with our healthcare providers. Otherwise, like, they can't help. Like there's no even opportunity. And unfortunately that feels really unsafe for people because they do have bad experiences with medical providers. And for like, that happens across the board. That happens with any profession. You'll have a bad experience with someone just because whatever reason, you know, and then it creates this wall and this sort of like fear of having that repeat itself. And I find that with therapy a lot. People have one bad experience and then they've ruled out therapy for forever. And I'm like, you need therapy just to deal with the fact that you had a bad therapy experience. Like,
that's like having a bad friend and ruling out having more friends. Like, that's just, that's not logical.
That's such a good metaphor. I'm totally stealing that. but yeah, I love that. Okay, well, we'll wrap it up there. Is there anything you're working on that you want to promote right now?
Oh, no, my Instagram. Come and join me on my Instagram.
Yeah, not unfun.
No. Well, if you search that, it will link you to the other one. Mm-hmm.
Nothing specific, just your Instagram?
No. Yeah. Well, I mean, I have a full-time job, so it's a bit of a side gig, which right. I'd like to continue as a slightly more encompassing side gig. But again, it's a weird one. I think it's a nice place to be in, that this is just something that I think is related and linked, but also isn't my whole career, because I think it puts less pressure on me in a bit, in a sense. Again, it's a lovely, lovely privileged position to be in.
Okay, well, thank you so much for coming on this podcast. I'm really excited about this episode. I think people will find it very helpful.
If you are loving the Trust Your Body Project podcast and are ready to dive headfirst into your healing transformation, head on over to whitneycatalano.com/food-freedom to learn more about working with me. whitneycatalano.com/food-freedom.